The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong.
Well, as always, I listen to the words of this song and realize that taking America back is the ideal goal. Before we can do that, we need to take control of our own lives. We need to take ourselves back. Good evening, Jeff Bennett in for the next 2 hours, as John Stadtmuller's got the evening off for one reason or another. I hope he is not sitting with what I'm sitting with, which has been one god-awful virus for the last week and a half plus. I'm not shaking it quickly. And it doesn't matter what I eat, what I imbibe. Wait a minute, maybe that's my problem. I need to go out and buy a bottle of cognac. Well, National Intel Report for the next 2 hours. Glad to be here. I received a call earlier in the day asking if I could take the slot, and given how many programs I've missed over the last couple of weeks due to this health issue, I said, let's jump on it. Interesting day. Watching markets on this third trading day of the year, fourth day of the new year. Dow Jones Industrial surpassed 25,000 points today and closed there for the first time, up 152 points to end the session at 25,075. S&P 500 was up nearly 11 points to close at 27,24. I round things off, okay? Forget the 0.99, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's crazy. NASDAQ up 12.4 today to close at 7078. Wow, they're screaming, absolutely screaming. Global Dow was even up nearly 33 to end their day at 3157. The metals are continuing to do well. Are they exploding? Are they at 15, 1600 an ounce? No. But you know what? We'll do what we can do. Oil off 7 cents a barrel today at $61.94. Lots of wide range of headlines. Quicksilver is going to buy surfwear rival Billabong. Real exciting there. This is the one I like. The U.S. is going to now suspend at least $1.3 billion in security aid to Pakistan. Now, this is something I've never understood. All the grief that goes on in the Middle East, and yet we fund massive money into Israel. We fund massive money into Pakistan, the Saudi Arabia, to Iran, Iraq. It goes on and on and on. And all these people hate each other's guts. And yet we continue to stick our nose in everybody else's business. We can't even resolve our own problems. And as a nation, that's bad enough. But it's amongst the reasons that we are here tonight to talk about some background, some market information. Let's take a look and see what we can do to help ourselves, support ourselves. Because if you're waiting for this administration or any administration in Washington to get life moving along for us, you got another thing coming. All right, so what do the metals do today? We're currently in the aftermarket. Gold up another 58 cents, currently at $1,321.59. Silver up 2 cents in the Hong Kong markets at $17.20. The other markets, I never get all that concerned about rhodium, palladium. Palladium's up a dollar or off a dollar in the closing in New York today at $1,091. Platinum off another dollar. They're at $961. As I've said before, platinum is so far below gold right now. It is an absolute shock to me. I've never seen this in the 30-odd years I've been in this business. So, and by the way, this program is brought to you in part by Kettle Moraine Precious Metals. We are the precious metals purveyor, provider, and representation for Republic Broadcasting Network. Please keep that in mind. Some of the headlines we posted at Kettle Moraine Precious Metals late last night. Where does the federal government get all that money? Another one, places that may never recover from the recession. This particular story drew me in because they're using Hemet, California, as their basic focus for the article. When I first got into this, into the precious metals business as a professional in the very early 90s, 1990, 91, I developed a marvelous relationship with a client and his wife over in Hemet. I'm not going to bother to tell you what his previous position had been before he retired, because it would like be like giving the guy's name away. I'm also going to suspect he's deceased. But he was a very big client. Very big. And, excuse me, figures. I got to keep my button, my finger near the button here. My apologies to all of you. This is a man who had the closet literally dug up in his home to put a safe in the floor in the whole nine yards. Well, my God, the minute you start doing that, you're kind of telling the workers in an area like that that you've got something to hide. I wouldn't be doing that too much. Another interesting article. Which I can't remember which, it came out of the Wall Street Journal, I think. The town that lost Macy's and then Sears, and at Christmas time of this year, all eyes were on JCPenney's. We're going to cover a little bit more of that a little bit later. On Tuesday, we began a two-part series, which I intended to conclude today, called The Greatest Bubble Ever, Why You'd Better Believe It. And the words were from David Stockman. Interesting guy. Stockman's kind of like Robert Reich, although they've done a fair amount of service for political parties and political regimes. Each one of them comes up with an awful lot of pro and con. That, to me, gives them a greater degree of legitimacy than somebody who strictly leans left or strictly leans right, from the political, the economic, the geopolitical, educational. It doesn't make a lot of difference. So that's why I find these guys interesting. The entire two-part series is posted right now. We are not going to have time to get back to that today, which is totally against what I intended. But you want to take a look at these headlines, these stories, and more at Kettle Moraine PreciousMetals.com. Now, if that's too difficult for you to figure out, go to republicbroadcasting.org. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a picture of a silver bullet. I think there's probably a couple of fingers holding it up. Click on that. Now, it's going to take you to Captain Morgana's treasure hunt, which there currently is not a special offering posted in that. But the contact information that you need for us, the phone number, proper spelling of Kettle Moraine, etc., it's all there for you. But you want to stick around for later in this program. We've got something very interesting that we've been able to put together with one of our suppliers. And we're going to kind of lead up to it, because there's a lot going on. Well, let's go back. What we made reference to was the closure of various Macy's stores and Sears and JCPenney's. And by the way, all this took place in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. It's quite an interesting story. Doesn't turn out as well as one would hope, but it turns out the direction that this country seems to be going in, my friends. Today, Sears told its employees that it will be shuttering over 100 more stores. Now, this is Sears Holding. And these closings consist of 64 Kmart stores and 39 Sears stores, all of which are expected to close between March and April of this year. Liquidation sales will begin as early as next week. Earlier Thursday morning, Macy's also revealed the locations of 11 stores that it will be closing this year, nearing on its previously announced plans to close 100 locations beginning last year. Their company has shuttered more than 120 locations since 2015, hoping that by whittling down its real estate portfolio, it can focus on its best assets. Growing competition from online players, with more brands choosing to sell through their own platforms. Department stores, including Sears and Macy's and Penney's and Kohl's, have all been forced to rethink their strategies, what inventory they will carry, how they'll get it to their shoppers. Well, I don't know how you folks think. I make no bones about it. I'm an old guy. I don't like ordering clothing online. Given the fact that so much of our clothing is made overseas by people who may anatomically and physically be somewhat smaller than we are in this country, I don't care to get clothes and, oh, but you've got to return, guaranteed. No, when I want clothes, I go to buy clothes. I try them on. I see what they are. I've seen advertisements for clothing, and I've also then subsequently seen what the end user received. I'll pass, thank you very much. But on the other hand, I've got to say, if Sears, JCPenney's would have continued on with the mentality of catalog sales, which is what built them, along with Monkey Wards, they could have easily translated those catalog sales into internet sales, online sales. But they didn't do it, did they? They backed away. They decided to step up into the modern age. The problem is they did it far too late. And what they did is they stepped back into the antiquated age. And it, my friends, has hurt all of these big box stores. If you later should go to the site and read the article about the this interesting story about Pennsylvania, dealing with this gal who was, I think, 60, maybe nearly 70 years of age, who decided she needed to go back to work to make some bucks to just kind of help ends meet. Very nice-looking lady. They decided to put her in the jewelry counter because when she came in for the interview, she was so perfectly coiffed, matching earrings and necklaces and bracelets, and decided that would be the place for her. Now, they gave her some goals. Did she meet the goals? She came up a little bit shy, but as the story unloaded, you began to get a bigger picture of what lies ahead for America. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly? One bit of interesting news came out of Washington today. Trump, emboldened by his so-called victory in the passage of the biggest tax overhaul in decades, now wants to rein in social welfare programs, even though some Republicans are wary of tackling the volatile issue in a congressional election year. Oh, that's right. Another 11 months, people will be going to the polls to cast their votes for their midterm replacements. You see, this is the problem. Each party won't go to the bathroom without considering whether it'll cost them a vote or not. They're not looking forward to the benefit of the whole nation. Well, the White House has led a drive to downsize government aid programs, things like food stamps, housing subsidies, might energize conservative campaign donors whose support Republicans are counting on ahead of the November elections. And, of course, the party is going to be fighting desperately to keep control of Congress. White House aides say that Trump is eager to take on welfare, and he's got a willing partner in the House of Representatives, Speaker Paul Ryan, who's had a long interest in this issue. But I don't trust Ryan. Because although Ryan has expressed a strong interest in these issues for many years, Ryan has proven he's got absolutely no use for Trump. I'm not sure that I do either. Of course, then you go to other Republicans. They think that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is lukewarm on the drive for revising welfare, which might face a difficult sell in the Senate, where Republicans hold only a razor-thin 51-49 majority. Of course, Democrats are already attacking Trump for identifying welfare changes as his top 2018 goal, saying that they're designed to help pay for tax cuts whose benefits are skewed towards corporations and wealthy individuals, which will add an estimated $1.5 trillion to the debt over 10 years. Of course, Trump has then summoned Republican congressional leaders to the Camp David presidential retreat in Maryland coming up this weekend. They'll be discussing 2018 priorities, including welfare and a planned effort on infrastructure investment. Conservative House Republicans were especially enthusiastic about a welfare overhaul. Freedom Caucus leader Mark Meadows and the caucus former leader U.S. Representative Jim Jordan have discussed it with Trump. They're confident that the Republican president backs their ideas, such as strengthening work requirements for food stamps. He definitely gets it, Jordan said. Strengthening work requirement for food stamps. Okay, that's good. And there's more to all of this than meets the eye, too. One of the things I did read this morning that I fully agree with is that for those applying for government welfare, they may have to go through drug testing. Oh, how interesting. What a novel concept. But then keep in mind, with all of this, Republicans may need to tread carefully in seeking to reduce government aid programs that benefit some of Trump's core supporters in poor rural regions of the country. Republican Representative Tom Cole said Congress had on its plate in the early months of this year, including must-pass budget legislation, which he was unsure there would be the time or political will in the Senate to pass welfare legislation. First things first, he says, adding it might be better to lay the groundwork for debate over the issue than try to enact changes this year. You know, they've had years and years and years worth of time for debate. Why is it that the Congress, I don't care if they're Republican-controlled, Democratic-controlled, they never seem to get a damn thing done. Have you ever noticed that? Nothing that benefits we the people, so to speak. Meadows says he believes a welfare overhaul had strong support among Republican lawmakers, but convincing McConnell and the Democrats are Herculean tasks. Well, McConnell's brain dead, that's for starters. I'd like to see McConnell go at the same time that Pelosi goes and that Feinstein goes and that Sheila Jackson Lee goes, and on and on and on it goes. McCain, please take McCain with you too, will you? You see, when I target those sitting in office, I don't target them based upon which political party they are a part of. Oh, by the way, other Republicans and interest groups such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, they think 2018 would be better spent on infrastructure. Where's the money going to come from? As I began to look at some of these reports last week, and the amount of money that is needed in infrastructure is so, it's badly needed. Infrastructure is the highways you travel on. How many of these highways around the country have been toll roads? And their whole purpose for the tolls, we were told, was to maintain and upkeep of these roads. I remember a section of toll road on I-94 in Illinois that was originally scheduled to collect tolls for a period of no more than 5 years. That was in the late 1950s, early 60s. They're still collecting it. Who's zooming who? Well, Trump's first major legislative victory, the tax bill, took until the end of last year. But handing out tax breaks may be far easier than revamping welfare assistance that benefits millions of American families. I'm not saying it doesn't. And some of you listening may actually be collecting some government benefits and welfare, etc. As I've said in the past, when I was growing up, 6 months was a cap. Unemployment, 6 months, that was it. You were done. Food stamps was never meant to feed people forever and ever and ever. Amen. Where's the churches? Oh, that's right. The churches said, we can't help everybody. Please go to the government. They'll take care of you. Now the churches want them back. And the only way they can do it is to kowtow to the illegals, the invaders. And that's part of the problem. A year or so ago, there were more than 46, maybe 47 million people in U.S. households receiving SNAP. They're known as food stamps. And those numbers, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. How much did it cost the taxpayers? Well over $60 billion. Trump's budget proposal last year called for cutting more than $192 billion from SNAP over a decade. And Trump also proposed deep cuts to Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TARP. Last year, that provided aid to 1.1 million families. Democratic strategist Doug Thornell said a push on welfare could trigger a political backlash for Republicans from elderly and blue-collar voters in the November congressional elections. And Thornell said it may appeal to Trump's political base, but few else. And the irony here is that it'll be Trump's base who will feel the brunt of those cuts. Robert Dorr? Robert Dorr is a poverty specialist at the conservative-leaning American Enterprise Institute who has been in contact with Trump administration officials about policy ideas. And he's urged an incremental approach. I think it's long past the time for incremental. Oh, and by the way, a lot of this SNAP and this other TARP and all this other business, how much of that money has gone to the family of illegal invaders? Don't forget, once mommy and daddy break through the border and get here and establish something, and they start popping out little rugrats, ooh, hello there, Sapphire, they'd be eligible for every bit of stuff they can get from you and I. Well, Dorr said he doesn't know what policies the administration would ultimately back, but he said that Trump could encourage people to get jobs by reducing the length of their qualification for government aid and imposing stricter reviews on their efforts to find work. Oh, that's right, the way it used to be. He said Congress could pass legislation cutting benefits for people who fail to make enough effort to find jobs or do volunteer work. Some have argued that food stamp beneficiaries, for example, already include a high rate of people who hold jobs, but they're unable to make ends meet. It's a real quandary, isn't it? It's a real mix. And so when you begin to look at all this, one must begin to wonder. Here I sit that next month I will be 70. John, some years younger than I am. I don't know the age ranges of a lot of the other people who broadcast at this network. And we're doing. That's all we're doing is we're doing. But what about millennials? I mean, here I sit. I'm still working. But that's not just for economic reasons. It's because I'd go nuts if I wasn't working. And I know a lot of other people like that. I know more and more people in the automobile sales business that are in their 60s and 70s that have decided to, well, maybe they never left the business, so they decided to go back into it. Or out there peddling real estate. Or they're flipping homes. There's great money to be had in that area. But that's not the issue. The issue is, what about millennials? These are the kids that are in their 30s. Our contributing commentator states that his oldest granddaughter in her early 30s. Now, that's his granddaughter in his early 30s, her early 30s. How old is our author? And she asked the author, will millennials ever be able to retire? Now, she and her husband have two kids, a new home. They're still paying off their college loans. And our contributor says, I can still remember when we lived paycheck to paycheck, questioning why there was so much month left at the end of the money. And so he responded to his granddaughter, sure, but when and at what lifestyle? Depends on a lot of things, including decisions you make today. You know, it's pretty easy for young folks to look at retirement as something they need to address tomorrow. I mean, saving is put off. Too many bills to pay. Tomorrow does come. The end of retirement reckoning is here before you know it. When I got out of the business that I've chosen, I was 42 years of age, 41, 42. And here I sit today, weeks away from being 70. My God, how these years have flown. And what about you? What were you doing 30-odd years ago? How fast have these 30 years gone? Have we watched our lives improve economically? Have we gotten our houses paid off? But the fact is, are we still able to pay the taxes? Because if you don't, you're going to grab your house in a heartbeat. Hey, if you got a homeowners association to deal with and you haven't paid your dues because you were needed to get a freezer full of T-bones out there, they'll grab your house too. There's no freedom. There's no nothing that truly seems to be ours any longer. You know, I wish colleges required all students take a course called The Magic of Compounding. There's websites out there which provide a great compound interest calculator. Investor.gov, believe it or not. Our author uses that tool for all data calculations, assuming a 4% compounded rate of return. Where do you get that? You're not going to get it in CDs. You're not going to get it in a savings account, my friends. Well, let's give you an example. Let's take a look at the fictitious Smith family. They're both age 30. They're jointly earning $50,000 a year, and they commit to saving a modest $100,000 a month. That's not an outrageous sum of money. So the Smiths save for 20 years. It's $24,000 total. And then they stop saving at the age of 50, and they leave the money invested. Now, the Jones family decides to wait until they're 50 to begin saving. They save $200 a month, also for 28 years. They got $48,000 in title in total. And now they're age 70. Well, when both companies or both couples reach the age of 70, which family has the most money? Believe it or not, the Smith family has $78,385, but the Jones family has only about $71,500. The Smith family not only kept up with the Joneses, they surpassed them by almost 10%. And yet they saved only half as much money. So what happens if the Smith family chooses to save $100 a month for the entire 40 years? At age 70, they'd have $114,031. And by saving the same amount, $24,000, but sacrificing and starting young, they would have had almost 60% more. So who says compounding isn't magic? There's only one problem to all these stories, my friends. At the age of 70, I'm going to tell you right now, $78,385 is not going to last that long. And the Jones family at $71,467, they're not going to have money that lasts too long. And let's face it, $114,000, not too many years beyond that. Stay with us. We'll be back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you.
so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux has really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder, and their lower legs were hurting in a red color, but thankfully, there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Lord, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's been too dark to see. Felt like knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
One of those occasions where I prefer the original by Bob Dylan. Knocking on heaven's door. So you think about this. You reach the age of 70. You've got the kind of money that we've talked about that you've saved, the so-called big plus on compounding, etc. But what does it cost to live today? I mean, this became so intriguing. Let's go back. Let's go back a number of years. Let me find this image I pulled up today. Oh, come on. Where did you go? Here it is. 70. Well, let's talk about 1970. Now, that's the year I got out of the military. I mustered out of Vietnam on January the 6th of 1970. Out of the military, active service, a day later, out of Fort Lewis, Washington. Hopped out of plane, heading down to North Hollywood. spent some time with my aunt and uncle. Met a real nice stewardess on the plane, gave her a bottle of gin. Oh, she was a happy camper. Never saw her again, didn't care, not a big deal. What was the cost of living in 1970? Average cost of a new house, $23,450. Now, what kind of a house? I don't know. Average income, $9,400. You could buy one hell of a nice brand new car for $3,450. I remember 1972, just 2 years later, thereabouts. You could buy an exquisite two-door Impala coupe, or coupe, as it were. Beautiful, darkish blue metallic paint, white vinyl roof. Oh, yeah, in the Midwest, those things were big, man. Automatic, power steering, power brakes, air conditioning. AM/FM stereo was the big thing that year. Oh, yeah. No tape player. White wall tires. Beautiful brocade-looking upholstery. Gorgeous car. $2,750. That was 2 years later. Oh, by the way, the minimum wage in 1970 was $2.10. You could buy a ticket to go to the movies for $1.55. Gasoline. Yeah, depending on where you were, what time of the year it was, ranged anywhere from 29 to 35 cents a gallon. Cost of a postage stamp, 6 cents. Sugar for 5 pounds, 39 cents. Milk, 62 cents a gallon. Well, milk's a little bit of a kind of a draw today. It's kind of strange. I can buy a gallon of 2% milk for less than $2 over at Wally World. You go somewhere else to buy it, you might pay a buck more. Milk's kind of one of those liter things, you know. Coffee, $1.90 a pound. A real pound, not one of those 11-ounce, 13-ounce pounds. Eggs, 59 cents a dozen. Bread? Well, I'm sure it was white bread at 25 cents. You know, rainbow bread, all that kind of stuff. Compare all of that with the cost of all of these items today. You can't get into a movie for less than $7-$8. New house? I don't know. Anybody that would be stupid enough to pay me $280,000 for this house would be more than welcome to have it and get it off my hands. Minimum wage? Well, I guess in some states it's going up this year to considerably more than it was in 1970. New car? You can't even buy a decent used car for $3,450 unless you're buying one privately. Postage stamp, what are they running now? 40 cents or something like that, and yet they can't make it. I talked to a friend of mine who works for the post office, Gary. He happens to be my local delivery guy. Gary and I have gotten pretty close over the years. He said the problem with the post office is their pension fund. That's what's draining them. And yet Trump wants the post office to raise all their rates. He doesn't get it. That's why people don't write letters anymore. They text. They send emails. There's no personalization of a letter being mailed anymore to anyone. You know, the old days you used to get 40, 50, 60, 70 Christmas cards a year. I don't think we had a dozen this year. Of course, maybe that's because everybody died off. I don't know. Coffee? I don't know. I'm fortunate because of where my granddaughter works that I get a free pound of coffee every week if I want it. But I'm finding I'm cutting back because I don't even like what I'm drinking. I've also decided my coffee maker's shot. I've cleaned it, but it just isn't coming out hot and doing what it should do anymore. So it's time to just get rid of it. But then I used to go through a couple of pots a day, so what do you want? Eggs, I don't remember what they cost. I buy them. Bread, you can buy low-end garbage bread for just under $2 a loaf. Other than that, you better go find a day-old bread store, which doesn't bother me. It's not so spongy. But you see, that goes to show you how not very far, that $71,000 will go for any lengthy period of time. It's the food. It's the cost of fuel. Now, although the cost of a barrel of oil has been increasing, interestingly enough, I find that the cost of a gallon of gasoline in our area has remained in the low 220 range. You know, oh, God knows. I'm not planning on traveling to California anytime too soon. Let's see. They've legalized pot so they can jack in all the tax money they're going to get out of it. The snows aren't doing real well on the West Coast, which means that California could be entering a drought once again. They're having more earthquakes. The state is now a sanctuary state, so now the state of California is going to have to support all the illegals. Or are they going to allow the illegals the right to work? I don't know. It's insane anymore. So the question becomes, can millennials realistically save? Our author was raised as an only child. He was almost 60 when he was shocked to learn that he had two younger half-sisters. The reunion was like something you would see on an Oprah Winfrey show, hugs, tears, instant love. But one of his great joys in life was being Uncle Dennis, proudly watching his young nieces and nephews grow up. His nephew James, a school teacher, late 30s, married, three young kids, reads various newsletters, including the author's, started asking about investments. How is he managing to accumulate investment capital with a new home and three young kids? And so our author asked if his nephew would do an interview. He was reluctant, saying that he and his wife are really just middle-class folk. They're certainly not rich by any standards. But our author said, I explained that my goal is to help educate, encourage his generation to understand and look at the big picture rather than just put off the savings problem for another 20 years or so. So he agreed to go ahead. So our author, let's go down and grab his name here real quick. I got to scroll and hope to God I can get back up and not lose off where I was. Dennis Miller. No, not that Dennis Miller. This is a different guy, okay? This guy's an economics writer, etc. And so Dennis begins by saying, James, on behalf of our listeners, our readers, I want to thank you for your time. My year-end article is focused on mentoring. Hearing from someone who's walking the walk is terrific. School teacher in rural Pennsylvania doesn't earn big bucks. How did you get started? He says, well, thanks, Unc. Thanks for inviting me. My background is really pretty simple. I was fortunate to graduate without any student loans. I worked a lot during college, lived frugally because I wanted to graduate debt-free. Now, that's a rarity, my friends. The government doesn't really emphasize that, okay? The government wants you to, you know, get on the dole and owe them a bunch of money. But James went on to say, I didn't graduate with any confidence I'd be able to save money to live comfortably. And with a bachelor's degree in secondary education and a starting salary of $32,500, I was aiming more towards good health care and a good pension, not just early earnings. My fiance was in her senior year. An added bonus of committing to a relationship early was that I wasn't spending every evening out at a bar like many young people. In small towns, bars are often the only venues where single folks have a chance to meet. Bar hopping ain't cheap. So I dedicated that year to saving, accumulating over $15,000. In 1 year, he was able to save $15,000 out of his salary at $32,500. How do you do that? He says he enjoyed the challenge, saving hard, living on a self-induced shoestring budget during the 1 year of my life when I could fully get away with it. My biggest expense was the engagement ring. Marrying and having children are ultimate blessings, but with them comes a compromise of inconveniencing your family in the short term for long-term security. Being single brought no such trade-offs. And many young people today plunge into immediate debt, buying everything a middle-aged, upper-class family wants as soon as they enter the real world. And I was determined not to get married burdened with debts that would take years to pay off. So Dennis says, well, I've seen cases where newlyweds spend the money they saved up to that point, and yet you and Stephanie seem to be continuing to minimize your debts and accumulate wealth. How have you done that? James says, excluding her from our financial history would be like trying to tell a story with every other page missing. We built a foundation prior to our engagement by ensuring we are of similar mindset, not only with children, but our faith, where we wanted to live, but also our financial outlook as well. I've seen marriages ruin when one spouse values saving, but the other is a spendthrift. It's impossible to foster long-lasting trust when one half of a couple is spending as fast or faster than their combined earnings. If both spouses are not on the same page, I'd recommend some serious discussion because it'll eventually boil into a big marital problem. You might find it interesting to know that Stephanie maxed her 401k contributions immediately when she began working. I didn't begin doing that until 10 years later, he says. Like the example you used earlier, I doubt I will ever catch up to what she has saved. Compounding is magic. Dennis says, well, let's talk about wealth accumulation. I know you've done some things above and beyond your jobs. What have you done? James says, it may sound simple, but I believe that there are some easy principles to follow. We discussed being dedicated savers. It is what you do from there that really matters. He says, I don't believe most people can accumulate wealth working 40 hours a week. You have to do more. And also, there's a huge difference between appreciating and depreciating assets. Cars are a killer. They are great examples of depreciating assets because they lose a lot of value as soon as you drive them off the lot. We decided that reasonably priced, good used cars would cost far less, particularly if you drive them for several years. We've got some money in the market. We've done okay. And yet the time commitment to stay on top of those things is burdensome. That is an interesting key I have to insert here. Most people who get involved with the stock market, and I don't know how a lot of folks do it today, but back in the old days, you had a stock broker. Could have been with any number of firms. And the only time you heard from that broker is when he had something to sell you. Listen, I've been watching the market. Johnny, you got to get rid of this thing. It's about to tank. I got some inside information. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Sears catalog sales are dropping because Amazon's coming into play. I'm just throwing a quick example at you. You got to get out of this stuff. But I got this hot deal for you over here. All the guy's doing is churning. Now, it's not to say that there weren't some caring, knowledgeable brokers. I've known people that have done very well. But the one person I knew that did the best, that I personally knew, investing in stocks, is a man who started in the 1940s by investing $10,000 in the stock market. But instead of turning the management of his, at 10 grand was a lot of money in the late 1940s, okay? The war is over. He's starting to get into his own. He's acceptable. He's extremely well respected in his field, et cetera, et cetera. But he did one thing that no one else I ever knew did. He gave the orders. He would call his broker and give him the buy, the sell, the number of shares, et cetera, et cetera. He would give the bid and the ask. Buy at this figure, sell at this figure, etc., etc. That was in the late 1940s. The man passed away in the early 90s and left an estate valued at $7 million. Now, that's compounding, number one, but it's because he took day-to-day involvement with his portfolio. He could read. He knew the profits, the earnings, the ups, the downs, and everything. Every single thing he owned, he was more on top of than his stockbrokers. And there were times that I was in his office, and he would call his broker, and his broker sat there trying to talk him out of it. And he finally reached a point one day, he said, look, I've done my homework. And I've been on this particular, you know, ITT, AT&T, whatever the things he was invested in. He had done his homework more so than the stock brokers had done, the salesmen. So if you're going to be involved in that market, be your own best friend. Do your own studies. Do your own preparation. Do not rely on some damn salesman. It's that simple. And so James continues with his commentary. He says, we've got some money in the market. We've done okay. And yet the time commitment to stay on top of things is burdensome. Yes, it is. But that's how my grandfather turned $10,000 into $7 million in just over 40 years. James says, we bought some rental property, quickly learned that tenants have no problem trashing your property and living 90 days rent-free before we can evict them. And after renovating a tenant trash property, we realized we could sell it and make more than we would renting it for a few years. Our second rental's up for sale. We can make more money flipping houses than renting. But finding the right property, fixing it up, and reselling it at profit is real nice appreciation, something our schedule allows us to do. The adage of you have to have money to make money is absolutely true. Finances are like a snowball rolling downhill. The larger your snowball, your equity, your savings, the faster it's going to roll. And the more momentum, the future earnings, you will gain from it. But without an early start and strong foundation, people do not have the savings to allow them those opportunities. And Dennis says, well, how tough is it to see your friends living in fancy houses and driving new cars? James says, we got a nice house, one that we're proud of. We've done a lot to fix it up and add value. Yeah, we got friends who appear to have much more, but in some cases, it's the illusion of wealth. We've got friends with a model of hard work, 2-3 jobs, but their extravagant lifestyle has them mired in debt. He says, a good friend of mine, 10 years my senior, just built his dream house for his family. They got a swimming pool, a huge patio, a pool house to boot. And they have less equity than my wife and I had 9 years ago when we first bought our home. They're only now starting a mortgage in their mid-40s while my wife and I are finishing ours in our 30s. They'll both have to work well into their 70s, if not longer. And he said, a common denominator I find with people who chain themselves into these situations is that they focus only on monthly expenses rather than the overall picture. As long as their expenses are not exceeding their monthly income, they convince themselves that they're fine. But in reality, they're on a financial treadmill making no progress. Dennis has one final question, James. I had a financial epiphany when I was your age. I realized that when you pay something off, it's not a signal to buy something else. Instead, pay off another debt. That's how you get off the treadmill. I felt like I was racing to beat the heart attack. Fortunately, Dennis says, we had a great economy, and I was moving into my peak earning years. Today, it might be a lot tougher. What advice would you give our readers, our listeners, who may be in the situation you are outlined? James says, I feel that many people approaching 40. Now, look, I don't know how many listeners we have to this network, to RBN. I don't know how many listeners to this program this evening are in their 40s or just reaching 40. I've got a distinct feeling a good number of us are a little bit closer to my age. Some of you may be even older. But how many people approaching 40 stop to come up for air and assess things? If you're digging yourself into a hole, stop digging. Build a plan to get out of the hole. James says, I speak from experience, knowing we will have our home paid for shortly. We sleep better at night knowing. If we just keep doing what we're doing, Stephanie and I can educate our children and retire with a comfortable lifestyle. Uncle, there's a good chance that a lot of people my age will be forced to work until their late 70s or more, largely because they fail to save early, and they try to live beyond their means right out of the gate. What we have to do, or what we have done, is not all that spectacular. But it floors me how many people my age fail to do so. Pay your debts first. Each month, save some money, then learn to live on the rest. It's not hopeless if you've gotten a late start, but you've got to start saving now. Dennis says, thanks again. James says, my pleasure. Well, there you've got it. A proof that millennials can enjoy life, retire comfortably. As always, it's a matter of choices. So let's give you a quick summary of that, which we've done for this past half hour or so. Focus on living below your means. And by appreciating assets and minimize depreciating assets, buy, in other words, purchase appreciating assets, minimize depreciating assets. You see, compounding is magic. Start as early as you can, because you ain't never going to get rich working 40 hours a week. Oh, and both spouses must work together toward their common goal. But friends, it's never too late to start. The formula works for those who work hard to achieve their goals. Making and keeping some New Year's resolutions, well, might be a giant first step. But finally, and remember this, if you always protect your offspring in a cocoon, they will never learn how to fly. I will share something with you. As I put programs together, I find things that are of interest. This particular piece, more than any I've done in a long, long time, has held a far, far greater interest. I've learned some things. If you always protect your offspring in a cocoon, they will never learn how to fly. Dennis Miller, Burning Platform, dated today. What an amazing piece. And so, our next question, and maybe it's not a question, are we the people, or are we as a nation, going to see a return to financial sanity? I question that. Time allowing, in the next hour, we're going to attempt to answer that question. Hope you're there, Michael. Good, I'm glad. I need to hit the library real badly. Can we run some early music and some ads and all that good stuff? Cool. Good deal. I'll be right back with you, folks. We're going to run some music and early ads. Stick around.
What happened since the last time we spoke? Some of them are funny, some of them ain't no joke, and I trust you will forgive me if I lay it on the line. I always thought you were a friend of mine. And sometimes I think about you.
Noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
This is RBN, the Republic.